Chapter 52. Wrote to Dr. Coghill to take care of passing my patent, and to Parvisel to attend him with money if he has any, or to borrow some where he can. Knight, M.D. 25. Morning. I know not whether my warrant be yet ready from the Duke of Ormond. I suppose it will by tonight. I am going abroad, and will keep this unsealed till I know whether all be finished. Mallow, 26, Salas. I had this letter all day in my pocket, waiting till I heard the warrants were gone over. Mr. Lewis sent to Southwell's clerk at 10, and he said the Bishop of Killaloe, 27, had desired they should be stopped till next post. He sent again that the Bishop of Killaloe's business had nothing to do with ours. Then I went myself, but it was past 11, and asked the reason. Killaloe is removed to Raffo, and he has a mind to have an order for the rents of Raffo that have fallen due since the vacancy, and he would have all stopped till he has gotten that. A pretty request. But the clerk, at Mr. Lewis's message, sent the warrants for Stern and me. But then it was too late to send this, which frets me heartily, that M.D. should not have intelligence first from P.D.F.R. I think to take £100 a year out of the deanery, and divide it between M.D. and P.R., 28, and so be 1 year longer in paying the debt. But we'll talk of this when I come over. So night, dear Salas. Leal. 29, 26. I was at court today, and 1,000 people gave me joy, so I ran out. I dined with Lady Orkney. Yesterday I dined with Lord Treasurer, and his Saturday people as usual, and was so bedianed. The Archbishop of York says he will never more speak against me. Pray see that Parvisel stirs about getting my patent. I have given Took D.D.'s note to prove she is alive. I'll answer Uredel. Night. 27. Nothing new today. I dined with Tom Harley, etc. I'll seal up this to dash night. Pray write soon. Leal. Letter 64. 1. London, May 16, 1713. I had yours, number 40, yesterday. Your new bishop acts very ungratefully. I cannot say so bad of it as he deserved. I begged at the same post his warrant and mine went over, that he would leave those livings to my disposal. I shall write this post to him to let him know how ill I take it. I have letters to tell me that I ought to think of employing somebody to set the tithes of the deanery. I know not what to do at this distance. I cannot be in Ireland under a month. I will write two orders. One to Parvisel, and t'other to Parvisel, and a blank for whatever fellow it is whom the last dean employed. And I would desire you to advise with friends which to make use of. And if the latter, let the fellow's name be inserted, and both act by commission. If the former, then speak to Parvisel, and know whether he can undertake it. I doubt it is hardly to be done by a perfect stranger alone, as Parvisel is. He may perhaps venture at all to keep up his interest with me, but that is needless, for I am willing to do him any good that will do me no harm. Pray advise with Walls and Raymond, and a little with Bishop Stern for form. Tell Raymond I cannot succeed for him to get that living of Moymed. It is represented here as a great sinecure. Several chaplains have solicited for it, and it has vexed me so that, if I live, I will make it my business to serve him better in something else. I am heartily sorry for his illness, and that of the other two. If it be not necessary to let the tithes till a month hence, you may keep the two papers, and advise well in the meantime, and whenever it is absolutely necessary, then give that paper which you are most advised to. I thank Mr. Walls for his letter. Tell him that must serve for an answer, with my service to him and her. I shall buy Bishop Stern's heir, as soon as his household goods. I shall be ruined, or at least sadly cramped, unless the Queen will give me £1,000. I am sure she owes me a great deal more. Lord Treasurer rallies me upon it, and I believe intends it. But, quando? I am advised to hasten over as soon as possible, and so I will, and hope to set out the beginning of June. Take no lodging for me. What? At your old tricks again? I can lie somewhere after I land, and I care not where, nor how. I will buy your eggs and bacon, D.D. Dot to your caps and Bible, and pray think immediately, and give me some commissions, and I will perform them as far as UPPDFR can. 3. The letter I sent before this was to have gone a post before, but an accident hindered it, and, I assure you, I am very accurate, for MD did not write to Dean PDFR, and I think you might have had a Dean under your girdle for the superscription. I have just finished my treatise, 5, and must be 10 days correcting it. Farewell, dealist MD, 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 FW, 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 me, Leal. You'll seal the two papers after my name. London, May 16, 1713. I appoint Mr. Isaiah Parvisel and Mr. to set and let the tithes of the Deanery of St. Patrick's for this present year. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and seal, the day and year above written. Jonet. Swift. 6. London, May 16, 1713. I do hereby appoint Mr. Isaiah Parvisel my proctor, to set and let the tithes of the Deanery of St. Patrick's. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand and seal, the day and year above written. Jonet. Swift. Letter 65. 1. Chester, June 6, 1713. I am come here after 6 days. I set out on Monday last, and got here today about 11 in the morning. A noble rider, face. And all the ships and people went off yesterday with a rare wind. This was told me, to my comfort, upon my arrival. Having not used riding these 3 years, made me terrible weary, yet I resolve on Monday, to set out for Holyhead, as weary as I am. 'Tis good for my health, ma'am. When I came here, I found MD's letter of the 26th of May sent down to me. Had you writ a post sooner I might have brought some pins. But you were lazy, and would not write your orders immediately, as I desired you. I will come when God pleases. Perhaps I may be with you in a week. I will be 3 days going to Holyhead. I cannot ride faster, say as you will. I am upon stay behind's mare. I have the whole into myself. I would fain scape this Holyhead journey, but I have no prospect of ships, and it will be almost necessary I should be in Dublin before the 25th instant, to take the oaths. 2. Otherwise I must wait to a quarter sessions. I will lodge as I can, therefore take no lodgings for me, to pay in my absence. The poor Dean can't afford it. I spoke again to the Duke of Ormond about Moyme for Raymond, and hope he may yet have it, for I laid it strongly to the Duke, and gave him the Bishop of Meath's memorial. I am sorry for Raymond's fistula, tell him so. I will speak to Lord Treasurer about Mrs. South, 3, tomorrow. Odd so. I forgot, I thought I had been in London. Mrs. Tisdall, 4, is very big, ready to lie down. Her husband is a puppy. Do his feet stink still? The letters to Ireland go at so uncertain an hour that I am forced to conclude. Farewell, MD, 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 FW, 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 me. Leal, oaks and ladies both fair and slender. On flyleaf. I mightily approve PPT's project of hanging the blind parson. When I read that passage upon Chester walls, as I was coming into town, and just received your letter, I said aloud, agreeable BTCH. Notes. These notes are referenced by notes to the introduction or letter number, and the numbers in square brackets thus, 3, in the body of the journal. Notes to the introduction. 1. Notes and queries, 6th series, X287. 2. See letter from Swift to John Temple, February 1737. She was then, light sung with ears and unwieldiness. 3. Athenaeum, August 8, 1891. 4. Journal, May 4, 1711. 5 Crates Life of Swift, 269. 6 Unpublished Letters of Dean Swift, pages 189-96. 7 and 1730 he wrote, those who have been married may form juster ideas of that estate than I can pretend to do. Dr. Burke McHill's Unpublished Letters of Dean Swift, page 237. 8 Scott added a new incident which has become incorporated in the popular conception of Swift's story. Delany is said to have met Swift rushing out of Archbishop King's study with a countenance of distraction immediately after the wedding. King, who was in tears, said, you have just met the most unhappy man on earth, but on the subject of his wretchedness you must never ask a question. Will it be believed that Scott, who rejects Delany's inference from this alleged incident, had no better authority for it than friend of his, Delany's, relict? 9. This incident, for which there is probably some foundation of fact we cannot say how much, has been greatly expanded by Mrs. Woods in her novel Esther Van Omri. Unfortunately, most of her readers cannot, of course, judge exactly how far her story is a work of imagination. 10. In October, Swift explained that he had been in the country, partly, to see a lady of my old acquaintance, who was extremely ill. Unpublished Letters of Dean Swift, page 198. 11. There is a story that shortly before her death Swift begged Stella to allow herself to be publicly announced as his wife, but that she replied that it was then too late. The versions given by Delany and Theophilus Swift differ considerably, while Sheridan alters the whole thing by representing Swift as brutally refusing to comply with Stella's last wishes. 12. There has also been the absurd suggestion that the impediment was Swift's knowledge that both he and Stella were the illegitimate children of Sir William Temple, a theory which is absolutely disproved by known facts. 13. It is curious to note the intimate knowledge of some of Swift's peculiarities which was possessed by the hostile writer of a pamphlet called A Hue and Cry After Dr. S-T, published in 1714. That piece consists, for the most part, of extracts from a supposed diary by Swift, and contains such passages as these. Ready. Go to the club. I'm treated. Expenses 1 shilling. Adderday. Bid my servant get all things ready for a journey to the country. Mend my breeches. Hire a washerwoman, making her allow for old shirts, socks, daps, and marquees, which she bought of me. 6 coaches of quality, and 9 hacks, this day called at my lodgings. Thursday. The Earl looked queerly. Left him in a huff. Bid him send for me, when he was fit for company. Spent 10 shillings. 14. The Idle language is marked chiefly by such changes of letters, e.g. G, L for R, or R for L, as a child makes when learning to speak. The combinations of letters in which Swift indulges are not so easy of interpretation. For himself he uses PDFR, and sometimes Potiphar or FR, perhaps poor dear foolish rogue. Stella's PPT, poor pretty thing, MD, my dears, usually stands for both Stella and Mrs. Dingley, but sometimes for Stella alone. Mrs. Dingley is indicated by me, Madam Elderly, D, or DD, Dear Dingley. The letters FW may mean farewell, or foolish wenches. Leal seems sometimes to be there, and sometimes truly. Letter 1. 1. Addressed, O Mrs. Dingley, at Mr. Curry's house over against the Ram in Capel Street, Dublin, Ireland, and endorsed by Esther Johnson, September 9. Received. Afterwards Swift added, MD received this September 9, and letters to Ireland from September 1, 1710 begun soon after the change of ministry. Nothing in this. 2. Beaumont is the Ray Old Fellow, Poet Joe, of Swift's verses and the little house by the churchyard at Castlenock. Joseph Beaumont, a linen-merchant, is described as venerable, handsome, gray-headed man, of quick and various natural abilities, but not improved by learning. His inventions and mathematical speculations, relating to the longitude and other things, brought on mental troubles, which were intensified by bankruptcy, about 1718. He was afterwards removed from Dublin to his home at Trim, where he rallied. But in a few years his madness returned, and he committed suicide. 3. Vicar of Trim, and formerly a fellow of Trinity College, Dublin. In various places in his correspondence Swift criticizes the failings of Dr. Anthony Raymond, who was, says Scott, a particular friend. His unreliability in money matters, the improvidence of his large family, his peculiarities in grammar, his pride in his good manners, all these points are noticed in the journal and elsewhere. But when Dr. Raymond returned to Ireland after a visit to London, Swift felt a little melancholy, and regretted that he had not seen more of him. In July 1713 Raymond was presented to the Crown living of Moynat. 4. A small township on the estuary of the Dee, between 12 and 13 miles northwest of Chester. In the early part of the 18th century Parkgate was a rival of Holyhead as a station for the Dublin packets, which started, on the Irish side, from off Kingsend. 5. Dr. St. George Ashe, afterwards Bishop of Derry, who had been Swift's tutor at Trinity College, Dublin. He died in 1718. It is this lifelong friend who is said to have married Swift and Esther Johnson in 1716. 6. The commission to solicit for the remission of the first fruits and 20th parts, payable to the Crown by the Irish clergy, was signed by the Archbishops of Armagh, Dublin, and Cashel, and the Bishops of Kildare, Meath, and Killala. 7. Dr. William Lloyd was appointed Bishop of Killala in 1690. He had previously been Dean of Achonry. 8. Dr. John Hawke, 1651-1743, in 1687 he had been elected President of Magdalen College, Oxford, in place of the nominee of James II. Hawke was Bishop of Oxford, Lichfield, and Worcester successively, and declined the primacy in 1715. 9. Steele was at this time gazetteer. The cockpit, in Whitehall, looked upon St. James Palace, and was used for various government purposes. 10. This coffee house, the resort of the Whig politicians, was kept by a man named Eliot. It is often alluded to in the Tatler and Spectator. 11. William Stewart, 2nd Viscount Mountjoy, a friend and correspondent of Swift's in Ireland. He was the son of one of William's generals, and was himself a lieutenant general and master general of the ordnance. He died in 1728. 12. Catherine, daughter of Maurice Keating, of Naremore, Kildare, and wife of Garrett Wesley, of Dangan, M.P.P. 4 Meath. She died in 1745. On the death of Garrett Wesley without issue in 1728 the property passed to a cousin, Richard Coley, who was afterwards created Baron Mornington, and was grandfather to the Duke of Wellington. 13. The landlady of Esther Johnson and Mrs. Dingley. 14. Swift's housekeeper at Lyrica. Elsewhere Swift speaks of his L.D. Presbyterian housekeeper, who has been my Walpole above 30 years, whenever I lived in this kingdom. O. Beaumont is my oracle for public affairs in the country, and an old Presbyterian woman in town. 15. Isaiah Parvisel, Swift's tithe agent and steward at Lyrica, was an Irishman of French extraction, who died in 1718, Birkbeck's Unpublished Letters of Dean Swift, 1899, page 885, letter 2. 1. In some MS. accounts of Swift's, in the Forster collection at South Kensington there is the following entry. Head out for England August 31st on Thursday, 10 at night, landed at Parkgate Friday 1st at noon. September 1, 171-0. Came to London. Thursday at noon, September 7th, with Lord Mountjoy, etc. Mem. : Lord Mountjoy bore my expenses from Chester to London. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.